Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Cost of Living by Mike Morgan, with music by Fall Precautions, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. Liz was spellbound. She leaned forward in her armchair to catch every word of what the very attractive actor was saying. The television advert was describing the exact solution she needed. These are uncertain times. Climate disasters, war, economic turmoil. Above all, inflation chipping away at your net worth. It's a cost of living crisis. But there's no reason to fear. The actor gave a dazzling smile as the camera zoomed in on his exceptionally trustworthy face. The skyrocketing cost of living only hurts those leading lives. Canned laughter flared up for a moment. He continued, suddenly serious again. The team at Sleep Your Troubles Away have the solution. Simply use our cutting-edge cryopods to sit out these turbulent decades. Put your lives on pause. Emerge from your peaceful slumbers once everything is normal again. And the best part is, here the music swelled. Your bank balance will continue to grow while you sit out the dangerous years to come. Compound interest will leave you richer when you awake than you were when you dropped off into your blissful repose. The commercial soundtrack reached a crescendo. The actor finished with the clincher. All this can be yours for a reasonable upfront flat fee. Contact us without delay. Places are limited and will be assigned to the highest bidders. A graphic flashed up with the words, "Guaranteed medically safe, approved by the World Health Council." Liz's hand was already reaching for the phone as she screamed into the next room. "Fabian, cancel all your meetings. I found a solution to our financial troubles." It was entirely unreasonable, Liz decided as she reviewed the latest financials from her consultant on her phone. The current rate of 40% annual inflation was projected to slow down the growth of their portfolio's earnings this year. And if forecasts for the medium term were to be believed, they wouldn't see a decent increase in the year-on-year returns for another decade. True, they weren't in danger of getting any poorer. But was life worth living if they weren't getting richer at an ever-accelerating rate? That's why signing up with the cryo company made so much sense. Not that Fabian agreed. As usual, he wasn't seeing the big picture. She tried again as they sat sipping cocktails in the back of their self-driving car. The chauffeur up front didn't have much left to do, since the vehicle steered itself, so he'd taken to serving them drinks instead. Liz was not upset by his resourcefulness. "Now, see here, Fabian, darling. It's quite simple. We let the dreadful little people sort out all the nastiness going on. Then, when the employees watching over the pods give the all clear, we get thawed out and emerge ready to retake our rightful places. In a world where all the messes are cleaned up." She gulped back something multicolored and tasting of coconut. "It's perfectly safe. And we'll be richer than ever." He looked dubious, convinced by neither her words nor the drink mixed by their chauffeur. She'd had enough. The time had come to treat her husband with a firm hand. "I won't hear any more on the matter. We're doing it, and that's that." She called through to the front of the autonomous vehicle. "Oh, I say, Barney, be a good chap and park the limo in the long-term storage after you drop us off. Then call the housekeeper to seal up the mansion." She ignored the sound of the vehicle's self-defense cannons firing. Liz glimpsed a fireball on the road behind them as a car flipped end over end into a passing tanker. more filthy carjackers, she presumed. They deserved everything they got. Barney, the chauffeur, shook another cocktail mixer and inquired, "Will there be anything else, madame?" She finished off her glass, not giving the destruction another thought. "Yes, tell the staff they're redundant. Don't want to fork out for their salaries while we're asleep." She winked at Fabian. A cost saving that almost pays for the cryo by itself. The chauffeur said hesitantly, "What about me?" She snorted, dismissing him from her thoughts as soon as the words were out of her mouth. "You're fired too, obviously. We're not going to need a chauffeur or a mixologist, not for the foreseeable." And there was another positive. Downsizing was fun. The car announced an unexpected detour. Apparently, the road surface was melting in the out-of-control temperatures, and they needed to switch to a route out of direct sunlight. Liz forced down a twinge of nervousness. She was almost positive there was plenty of time to get to the cryo showroom. "I'll need to check if we have any pods left," announced the harried clerk. "We only prepared 60 million of them. There's been, a lot of demand, what with it being the end of the world." Liz fidgeted with impatience while the young lady checked something on her terminal. The display area in the cryo company's Chelsea showroom was packed. There were hundreds of customers lined up amid the pristine floor models, and crowds hammering at the doors to be let in. Quite a few of the plebs outside had collapsed from heat exhaustion. The ones still moving were standing on top of them. The drive over had been a succession of dreadful inconveniences. She hoped for smooth sailing once they'd drawn close to their destination, but protesters had blocked the showroom's entrance. Liz had spilled her drink as the car had rolled over them. "I reserved online," she protested. "I have a confirmation number." "Yes, I know." The girl's tone was almost rude. "But there has been a lot of queue jumping." "I beg your pardon?" This was outrageous. "Are you telling me people have been stealing pods reserved by others?" "Outbidding," muttered the clerk, scowling at her screen. She fiddled with a strand of her red hair. Liz turned to Fabian. "Don't just stand there, do something." Her husband coughed suggestively and took something out from his wallet, a wad of 20-pound notes. He rifled through the chunk of cash until the clerk noticed. It didn't take long. "I was wondering," he began, "if this might be of any assistance." The clerk snuck out her hand and made the cash disappear into a deep pocket. "The strangest thing, madame, sir, I was able to find you two pods." "How extraordinary," breathed Liz. The clerk beckoned them to follow her through the doors into the back. "Your pods are just through here. I'll see to it you're well taken care of." Even Liz had to concede the rows of high-tech pods were an impressive sight, rack upon rack filling the facility. "Did you say 60 million? Her husband was kicking a pod as if he were checking a tire for air pressure. Not that he'd worried about car maintenance ever. He had people for that. The clerk nodded. "That's right, sir. Not all here, of course." She looked embarrassed at her attempt at humor. Given the state of the world, the governments of the advanced countries decided to work together to crack the technical problems around cryonics. Liz cut in. "I'm aware. I do pay attention to social media, you know." The clerk blinked at her. "I didn't mean to cause offense." The girl turned to Fabian. "Once a successful cryopod was built, the question became how many to mass produce. There were plans to construct an ark, if you will. A place where entire populations could sleep through the collapse and eventual regeneration of the ecosystem. Not to mention all the economic instability the end of the world causes." She shrugged. "Then several of the countries went bust. Sleep Your Troubles Away, Inc. bought up the pods. that have been finished at bargain prices. I assume then they made 60 million of them before their plans went awry? The girl nodded. The company owner is a friend of several world leaders. They cut him a deal. That's why we can undercut our competitors so much. Their cryopods are 5 times as expensive, and they're not as good as the ones the government's designed for themselves. Mr. Trusk, our owner, made certain those leaders were the first to be frozen, naturally. Liz poked Fabian in the shoulder. See? I told you this was a steal, and you won't get this quality anywhere else. The clerk added, 50 years is what it'll take for the world to heal, they estimate. Then we can bring everyone out of cryo. She swept a strand of red hair from her face. Another couple were led past them by a clerk in a similar uniform. I say, shouted Liz, is that the Farnsworths? They waved happily as they were taken to their own pods. Liz snarled at Fabian. That settles it. They always beat us to the punch on everything. If they're getting pods, then so are we. No dilly-dallying, Fabian. This is no time to be faint of heart. We're leaving Armageddon to the riffraff, and they're welcome to it. Everyone safely tucked in? Asked the cryopod supervisor. The pod monitor, who'd until recently been employed as a sales clerk on the display floor, tucked back a strand of red hair. All 60 million pods in use, according to my terminal. Sudden changes in career were common in these turbulent days. Why, her supervisor, Barney, had been a chauffeur only a few weeks ago. Biosigns are strong and stable. Failure rate almost nil. The supervisor nodded. Just as we promised. Demand is still pretty high for these things, she noted, indicating the endless racks of humming pods. There were facilities like this one throughout the world. Are we planning on making more? There's an announcement scheduled in a minute. Ask me again after we've listened to that. She accompanied her supervisor to the break room, where a large TV screen was mounted on the wall. The other shift workers came in to view the same announcement being broadcast from Company HQ. Mr. Trust's oddly shaped face filled the screen. Hi, gang. Wanted to say thank you for everything you've done. You're awesome. A cheer went up. Maybe he was planning on giving them a bonus. What with all the inflation, they could sure use one. We're at 100% utilization, continued Trusk. And that opens up some interesting possibilities. He paused for effect. Hey, gang. Answer me this. How many millionaires are there in the world, do you think? He didn't give anyone a chance to answer. If you thought 60 million, you're correct. And what do millionaires do, I ask you? He shrugged. No, I don't know either. And you'd think I'd have the inside scoop with being one. Oh wait, yes I do. They hoard wealth. Normally, that's not much of an issue. But we face some problems today. The environment, extreme weather, prices soaring out of control, governments collapsing everywhere. It's all related. I don't need to tell you that. He took a sip of water. The pod monitor narrowed her eyes. She had the beginning of an idea where this speech was heading. Trusk resumed. If only we had some money to solve these problems. If only we could free up resources we need to save the human race. Trouble is, 98% of the money in the world is tied up by 1% of the population. In fact, by the 60 million people who don't want to save anyone except themselves. He scratched his chin thoughtfully. Except, wait. Is it tied up? Because those rich people all elected to sit out eternity in pods I control. An assistant pushed a small box onto the table in front of Trusk. It had a big red button on it. Trusk slammed his palm down on the button with a flourish. Whoops, they're all dead now. What a sad indictment of big business's capacity to make morally unambiguous choices. He shrugged. I'll be off to jail in a few minutes. That's 60 million counts of murder right there. Worth it, in my opinion. Hey, gang, before I go, here's one last question for you. What would you do if, say, the remaining governments of the world seized the assets of all those now-dead millionaires and offered to spend the cash on practical solutions to addressing the world's problems? And that's not a hypothetical situation, by the way. I kind of prearranged this. He put on a look of amazement. You'd think someone would have stopped me, but seeing the rich and powerful abandoning most of their species had a strange effect on the guys left behind. He let out a titter that sounded a tad too highly stressed. So yeah, solutions. Because we need some great ideas. Seriously, right now. There were noises off screen. It sounded like law enforcement kicking down a door. Come on, gang. I'm a good boss. Maybe the last one left in the world, seeing as how I just killed millions of them. The point is, I'm a good boss because I listen. I listened to you saying how you'd know what to do if you were in charge. So, like any great boss, I removed obstacles standing in the way of you doing your jobs. So go to it, gang. Spend the money to save the world. Police officers burst into view, grabbing at Trusk. Under a pile of blue uniforms, he called out, "And spend all of it, mind. Don't leave a penny. It's no good to us once we're dead." They watched the screen go blank. In the ensuing hush, she asked her supervisor, "You got any ideas?" He shook his head. "No, do you?" That was the question. That sure was the question. We're All Family Here by Mark Soden Jr. with music by Fog Machine, read by the author.
It is particularly ironic that a corporation with the phrase "Do no harm" as a slogan from its corporate filing papers would authorize its battalion of lawyers to expand the Citizens United decision to include the right to marry as a part of corporate personhood. And in a clever twist, due to a corporation not being a physical person, the lawyers spun it so that the corporations did not qualify for polygamy. Hence, a corporation could marry hundreds or thousands or millions of women. This is how the workforce of the future was designed and delivered by artificial insemination, genetic engineering, and redefining family. At the outset, it seemed like a joke. Marry a corporation because a corporation is the perfect dad. After generations of country songs exhaustively plumbed the fertile topic of imperfect parenting, women in general were fed up with taking a chance on men. So when a corporation with a name that sounded like baby talk offered them a chance for something different, maybe better, there were enough of them interested in the project to get the ball rolling. The deal went like this. Yes, the corporation wanted a family, but not in the haphazard, messy way that humans started the project. First, careful consideration was given to the mother's genome. Then consideration was given to sperm donors globally. When the corporation found a match of complementary attributes, the sperm and egg met in a petri dish and then got housed inside of mom. This was only offered to women employed by the corporation, and they remain employed for the term of their pregnancy, raising their offspring, and the rest of their life. For the first time in recorded history, receiving pay for raising a family. Male employees complained about pay equity. They also complained that women would only have sex with them for recreation and wouldn't commit to marry them. They couldn't compete with the corporate dad. The corporate campus expanded to include a Levittown-like suburb to house the families of the Dad Corp. To say that this sort of in-house propagation of employees caught on is an understatement. It seemed that all corporations wanted to participate in this form of corporate personhood. The range of approaches of implementation and the idea generally reflected the unusual divided nature of the populace. There were religious implementations, racially segregated, and physical attribute-centric corporations. The tall and short corporations, for example. The society as a whole changed dramatically. As the number of people involved in these corporate marriages increased, corporations had returned to the Middle Ages. A time of fiefdoms. Tiny squabbles became wars. Although many of these squabbles were settled in cyber warfare, some were not. And thus returned the militia. Finally, something for the men to do with their spare time. As the corporations rose, the national power decreased. Leaving the nation to maintain infrastructure so the corporations could do business. Corporations handled social engineering. But how did the corporations become people? Where did this clearly flawed concept come from? For answers, we go to late May, 1886. At that time, J.C. Bancroft Davis was the reporter of decisions to the Supreme Court of the United States. He drafted a letter to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to check his work on the headnote of a decision. The Chief Justice responded in a flatulent puff of legalese that allowed the headnote to stand. Here's the headnote. The court does not wish to hear argument on the question whether the provision of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which forbids a state to deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws, applies to these corporations. We are all of the opinion that it does. It only took 100 years of legal spinning to turn the headnote into law. If there are any time travelers here tonight, head back to 1886 and remove the last sentence from the headnote. It will make the world a better place.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Cost of Living by Mike Morgan, with music by Fall Precautions, and We're All Family Here by Mark Soden Jr. with music by Fog Machine. Theme music by Dane Lescombe. Come visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree or online at spacecowboybooks.com. Don't forget to subscribe and visit us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.